Well, evening and morning, EPL State of Mind listeners, we're dropping the good today. But today we do gather with heavy hearts as we mourn the losses of not one, but two great football institutions. But fear not, for the face of adversity, we will find resilience. And in defeat, we will find opportunity. So grab your tissues, wipe away those tears, and join us as we navigate through the highs and the very low lows of this weekend's Premier League action. Well, I'm looking at myself and Sean, two very melancholy faces, and Kyle, a sleep-deprived Kyle from Las Vegas, who seems to have a little less happiness than we do, but that's probably just pure exhaustion. How are we doing, Kyle?
We're flying. We're thriving. Everything's great. Life is. Listen, big news out of soccer this weekend worldwide. I watched very little of it, which is a shame. But we'll get right into it. We will get right into it with the biggest news. Honestly, it has to be Bayer Leverkusen. What Xabi Alonso has been doing over there is unbelievable. They just won the league with a 5-0 win, and the scenes were incredible. I mean, take the time, watch the highlights, watch the game highlights, and watch the 12 minutes of the absolute pleasure, pandemonium, and what soccer is meant to be. Every single face in that stadium, they knew they were witnessing history. It was a pleasure to watch. It's 43 games in a row, unbeaten. That ties the longest streak ever. So they're one game away from being the sole owners of the longest unbeaten streak ever. It's incredible. They're five games out from an invincible season? And I think Sean put this in here. That would be the fourth side to ever do it since 1990. You have AC Milan in 91, Arsenal in 03, and Juventus in 11. So we got, two leagues so far. This would be the first time it's ever happened in the Bundesliga, or since 1990, I guess, which is a little surprising considering that is, in my opinion, the definition of a farmer's league. But it is what it is. They do still have two tournaments to play. They are in the finals of the DFB Pokal, and they are up 2-0 on West Ham in the Europa League quarterfinals. So it's really special what they're doing. But James, Sean, if they were in the Champions League this year, you think they're top three?
I mean, Bayer Leverkusen is flying, and what Xabi Alonso is doing over there is extremely impressive. And the only thing I want to say before I say what it is, big shout out to Granit Xhaka for continuing his Arsenal prowess over there and defeating Harry Kane's ability to get yet another trophy. So that's always nice to see that. But it's really impressive what Xavi's doing. He walked around the entire stadium at the end of the game. He shook everyone's hands around the perimeter of the pitch as well. And just a little tidbit of information here. The Bundesliga is still seven games away from being done. Five games? There's 18 of them? Yes, five games. So that makes sense. Five games away from being completed, and they've clinched the league set already. I know Inter Milan is close to doing that too, but we'll make more of a point of that later on in the episode on how many games to go when you clinch the league in this type of atmosphere. But for me, Bayer Leverkusen, without a doubt, would be top three. You can't have a season like this where you play 43 games, you've never lost, and you've drawn four times. I think by far they would give everyone in the Champions League a run for their money in their current form. I don't know if they'd win it, but I definitely think that you have to hand it to them. The fact that they haven't lost in 43 games, I don't care what competition you're in, you're going to give someone a hard time.
Absolutely. I think right now, arguably, they're playing the best football in Europe. I think I would have them third on if you started them and dropped them into the round of 16. I think City and Real, obviously, it's Real's baby tournament. They win it all the time. And City, I think, still is the best team in the world. But I would have Leverkusen right there. I think other than those two, I mean, you couldn't make the case that Bayern Munich is more of a favorite than them. I mean, they've dominated them head-to-head twice. I think Arsenal and Bayern are probably on the same tier of contenders, and then there's a drop off from there. So
yeah, 100%, absolutely. All I know is if you're a Bundesliga fan and you're outside of the Bayern Munich fan base, you are extremely excited for this result. Again, stopping Bayern Munich from winning their 12th straight league title. So congratulations to all of you Bayern Leverkusen fans out there. Hopefully, some of that victory can rub off on one of three of us. Hopefully not Kyle, but we'll see what we can do going from there. Well, we have a couple of things. We talked about it. Good segue into it. We were talking about where Bayer Leverkusen would live in the Champions League. We have fixtures tomorrow and on Wednesday. Sean, why don't you take us through tomorrow's fixtures in the Champions League?
Yep. Starting it off with Barcelona PSG. This game will be in Catalonia. Barca returning home after winning 3-2 on aggregate at the Parc des Princes. Kind of a quiet game from Mbappe in the last one. I don't know if that was tactical or just, you know, really good performance from the Barca defense. I'm interested to dive into that game a little bit closer and watch that tomorrow. Then we also have Dortmund Atletico at Dortmund. 2-1 Atletico on aggregate in the first leg. That was a very spicy affair, which is, you know, a surprise to no one. And we'll see, you know, what it looks like going forward. But then Wednesday, I think you guys have a little bit more interest in.
Yeah, absolutely. We're one of the two teams that tied their first leg. Obviously, we're going away now to Allianz Arena in Germany, which is not fantastic. I know we came out really strong in that first leg. We brought it to Bayern Munich, but we had some significant errors that led to the 2-2. I'm hoping that with what happened over the weekend, the Gunners kind of bounce back and see that this is still an opportunity to get some hardware. We definitely have a difficult road to go if we do end up winning, but this is going to be a very close game. We will be playing in Bayern Munich without Kingsley Coman due to injury. We will also be playing without their left back, Alphonso Davies, who is escaping for some reason my mind, but he is out due to suspension for yellow card accumulation. And there was one other player that I think was relatively significant that also picked up a minor knock over the past week will be out. But for me, Kingsley Coman and Alphonso Davies, both major blows to Bayern Munich. Arsenal is fully fit right now, and hopefully they can bounce back from a difficult loss over the weekend.
Yeah, the other one is Serge Gnabry, who got hurt at the weekend. So that's
and
a big one.
It'll be huge.
Right, right. Former Arsenal boy did score in that previous leg. So it'd probably be 18-year-old Matthias Tell who comes in on one of those wings, and then obviously Sané on the other one. But Bayern losing both of their wingers in the last, you know, 7 days is definitely a huge blow.
Yeah. I would like to see – we started the last match with Kivior. I think if Tomiyasu's fit, this is a perfect time to get him back in there. I just don't have a lot of faith in Zinchenko right now. I think when he did come in the first leg, I think he did really well to kind of demand that center of the pitch as the inverted fullback. And I think he did well on the first half of the game this weekend, but ultimately I think we just need a little bit more defensive stability. But who do we have on the second half of the day or the second match there, Kyle?
Yeah, hell yeah, Man City, baby. Woo! I would like to just touch on that Barca game, though, real quickly. I think one of the big keys to your victory is to shut down Sané. That man can ball. He is, other than Kane, I think that's the biggest threat out there for you guys. I mean, he had a 50-yard run that directly led to a PK where he just showed his speed and ball control and it walked through. It was crazy. So I think they're going to rely on him a lot in this coming matchup. So I'm pretty sure, you casually just have one of the best defenses in the world right now. You shut him down, you're going to be golden. But moving forward, we have Man City, Real Madrid. They tied 3-3. That was my favorite game of the year so far. All six goals were fucking bangers. Guys, check it out. It's Phil Foden is a freak. He's a fantastic player. I think might be a little biased here, but I think the only player in better form than him right now might be Cole Palmer in his last couple games. Every time I watch him play, it's just magic. But they are drawn right now. They are tied coming back to the Etihad. This is an exact replica of what happened last year. And when they came back to the Etihad, City slaughtered them. Just slaughtered them 4-0 at Manchester. So I have high hopes for this. We do still have a couple injuries picked up, but it's Pep Guardiola. He's going to find a way. I just hope he doesn't get stupid and force the players in that are kind of on the fence, because after this weekend, we'll get into it later, but you are in control of the Premier League right now. You have to figure out what's more important. So that's something that they're
going to do. I would even argue, though, if you win this game, I think you're in control of the Champions League too. Just based off of who's left and the path forward, I think if you're, like you, a Man City fan, you are in the driver's seat of both
competitions. I mean, I'm worried for Arsenal, though. I mean, absolutely. I know, you know, the stats would say City should beat Arsenal at this point in the Champions League, but we played each other twice this season. We didn't beat you once. So yeah. I'm definitely worried about that. Arteta just knows Pep's mindset. He you know, they're together. So
yeah,
I'm interested, but that's really where I sit on that. I'm real excited for these games. They're going to be fantastic. I mean, Madrid City is always going to be a banger of a game.
Yeah. I wouldn't be as excited for these games if you saw the first leg. I think we're going to see a lot lower scoring games in this one. I think a lot of teams, mainly tomorrow, are going to play a little bit more defensive minded who have the lead and are at home. So I think we'll see lower scoring games than we did on the first leg. But for that second day, it could be a slaughtering. But Sean, speaking about a slaughtering and one that I think we all love and would really enjoy to see continue for the remainder of the season is the slaughtering of one Tottenham Hotspurs versus a Newcastle United. Newcastle 4, Tottenham Hotspurs 0. This was at St. James's Park, and the XGs were 3.15 Newcastle to 0.85 Tottenham. Sean, why don't you take us through this a little bit and tell us about the Magpies?
This was a physical domination and demolition from Newcastle's perspective from start to finish, truly. They were first to every second ball. They physically pushed Tottenham around in the midfield, and that created and spurred on their chances. Anthony Gordon set up the first goal for Alexander Isak and then scored before the broadcast even switched back from the replay. So it was 2-0 in the blink of an eye within 20 minutes. Isak again scored right after halftime. And then Fabian Scher scored his fourth goal of the season, which is tied for the most with Gabriel for most goals by a center back or defensive player this season. And it moves Newcastle into sixth place for the first time in 2024. Last time they were in a guaranteed European spot was December 29th. So it's huge for them. And I think my overall takeaways are just Isak and Anthony Gordon are two of the best attackers in the Premier League. 18 goal contributions apiece, 17 goals and just one assist for Isak. And then Gordon with 10 and 8. He has more goals and more assists this year than he had in all of his previous three seasons in the Premier League combined. And they carry the load offensively. The next highest in terms of goal contributions is Trippier. He's got 1 goal and 11 or 10 assists. And then Bruno G, who set up the last goal for Isak, he has 4 and 6. So, I mean, clearly those are the main two guys for Newcastle.
If you look at it, Newcastle is a team of big names up and coming, right? When they had it with Anthony Gordon last year, it was Almiron who filled that spot and was putting out numbers like Anthony Gordon is. Unfortunately, he's been stricken with some injuries throughout the season, so we haven't been able to see him. But then you actually have Isak, who also didn't play that much last season due to injuries, coming on all forms. I'm telling you, I've said it before. I would say that Isak is the most clinical finisher in the English Premier League this season when it comes to pure volume and conversion rate. Every time he gets the ball and he cuts on his right foot or he hesitates and then slots it near post on his left, he has insane IQ for scoring goals and placement. So I would give not only my left nut, but also my right nut to see if we could convince Isak to become a Gooner next year. But unfortunately,
James, that's giving both way for the Gooners. Let me ask you though, after watching, you know, the Tottenham downfall, and I don't know if you watched, James, but Aston Villa played a pretty good game this weekend. Do you who do you have taking the fourth spot for Champions League right now? Like, if you had to say right now, five games left in the season.
Well, six, I know, for Spurs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know Spurs and Villa both have very difficult run-ins left, but if Villa can play the way they played this weekend, I would give it to Villa. But I really think it's a toss-up between the two.
The stat lines are crazy.
I think that's going to be closer.
Like, those teams, they each have 6 draws. They each have 8 losses. They each have exactly 49 goals against. Like, they are playing at the same level right now, those two teams. So I think
it's a good shout.
Didn't we mention Tottenham still has to play, like, Arsenal, City, and Liverpool just to finish the season?
Yeah, they do. They have all three of us. They have us this weekend. I'm sorry, next weekend on the 28th. And I mean, they have Chelsea still, they have Liverpool still, they have City, and they even have, oh, and that's a club friendly. They would have had Newcastle away, but that's in late May. I mean, it's going to be difficult. And I would say that you have a great, great shout out to see who would actually finish higher on the table than them, either Villa or it would be Spurs. So we'll find out and we can kind of go from there. But unfortunately, I think the only other thing that might be tighter than the fourth place position is still technically first place. Some major setbacks this weekend. And why don't we go ahead and I'll get my pain.
Oh, no. Are you sure?
Out of the way here.
You want to just rip it off like a Band-Aid?
I'll just rip the Band-Aid off. All right. And then we'll go over to Sean.
All right. I'm going to go grab a beer. I'll be back in like 20 minutes.
No, motherfucker. You're sitting through this shit. You're in first place. You got to listen to it. Hey, this was horrible to watch just because of how well Arsenal played in that first half. We were playing probably, if not the best football we have played all season against a very good, difficult team that we lost to earlier in the year. We had so much composure with the ball, and anytime we went up the pitch, whether it was down the right side with Saka, who was playing incredible, or the left side with Leandro Trossard and Jesus interchanging there, Havertz played more of the central position, which I'll talk about a little bit later on, but we looked so good. And I kid you not, about 20 minutes into the match, I just said Martin Odegaard is the best central midfielder in the English Premier League this season, without a doubt. He was bossing these Villa players around, man, just with his vision and passing ability. He looked fantastic. And now, of course, Kevin De Bruyne has a great argument to being the best still, but just based off of pure volume of how many games both of them played, I would take Martin.
Dude, Odegaard is so consistent. Yeah. He is so consistent, and he doesn't get hurt.
No, I'll knock on some wood now, but I mean, when you look at the consistency, like said, of Odegaard this season, he hasn't had the goals or assist output that he did last year, but he is creating so much, and he's really, as soon as he gets the ball, we don't lose it. He's either able to turn his body and move around a defender or a midfielder or pass the correct ball, and it's a through ball. We rarely lose it with
James. Do you remember growing up, we would play soccer? James and I were on the same team soccer growing up, and every now and then the coach would play practice with us. Yeah. And it was, you pass the ball to coach, he's going to turn around and find a great pass to someone else. And that's how you spread the field. That's literally what Odegaard is doing right now. He's acting like he's a league above the rest of the players.
He's leading by example. And unfortunately, we were not able to capitalize on how well we played in the first half. And the biggest thing for me is the miss around the 35th minute where Leandro Trossard had a great opportunity inside the 6-yard box from Jesus, the same two players that were able to link up in the Champions League, could have sealed, I think, the deal. Because if we put a goal in the first half, I would go out on a limb and say we would win this. The only time Aston Villa had an opportunity was in the 35th minute when Watkins hit the post, which I don't know how that doesn't go in. It hits the post and actually curls around the other post and goes out at the baseline for a goal kick. And that's just another clinical finisher of the English Premier League this season who was so close. He ended up getting his goal in the second half. But it was a completely different story in the second half. I mean, Villa completely dominated the game. They were by far the better team. They outnumbered us on corner kicks. I think they had 4 corner kicks in a row, which is ultimately how they got their first goal. And it was just horrible. It was horrible to watch because you saw the first half and Arsenal were so good. They were so good in the first half. And then you get to the second half and you just don't know what happened. Game plan didn't change much. But Villa and Unai Emery continue to haunt Arsenal. And it's just really unfortunate. You know, you had Yuri Tillemans, someone who I've held highly on the possible free transfer or later on transfer market from Leicester, who was relegated over the season, had a great opportunity, almost scored a banger, one of the best goals of the season, hit the crossbar, then the post. And from that point on, I knew that Villa was going to be the team that scored next. Although it only needed one opportunity for Arsenal, but we just weren't getting them like the first half. We needed to capitalize. So, you know, seeing that, especially after the Liverpool loss in the morning, which we'll talk about, was brutal. You know, one could say I deserved it for the hate watching that I was experiencing during the Liverpool game. Luigi will call it. We were jumping up and down every time there was a last second save on Liverpool or a miss by Liverpool. But, you know, Arsenal went and did the same exact thing. A couple standout players on the game we talked about already was Tielemans. He had that chance in the 61st minute, and then he had the assist to Watkins, which was a nice finish. Ollie Watkins, of course, gets his numbers up again with another goal. Saka also had a great opportunity, and he was playing very well throughout the game. Martin Ødegaard, I think, was the player of the match for me as far as Arsenal player goes. But I think player of the match would go to Nicolò Zaniolo because he played so well. And he came out of nowhere. He hasn't been playing consistently for Villa, but he played exceptionally well. He won the most duels on the pitch, and he seemed to really have our number. And I think if Leon Bailey came in for Zaniolo instead of Diaby, I think Villa doesn't win that game. I think keeping Zaniolo on was exactly what they needed. He was playing really well, and Unai Emery saw that.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned earlier, and you kind of glanced over it, but Havertz started as a central midfielder this game. What do you think about that? I mean, his height's got to be one of his biggest attributes up top, and his ability to shoot. Did you like or dislike that call?
I disliked it. I think that we thought maybe this was going to be an easier game than it was, which is why we wanted to get time for Trossard and Jesus on the same time as playing with Saka. That's the only reason I think that Havertz didn't play up top, is because Arteta wanted Trossard and Jesus to both get minutes this game, a bulk of the minutes, so that they could possibly go into the Champions League with options and being fresh and not coming off of the bench. To me, our best format has been with Havertz up top, and I don't know why you would change that, especially when this is one of our two, three hardest games remaining. This is right up there with Manchester United and Spurs for me, and this was a must-win game. And unfortunately, we're 2 points behind Man City, but when you look at your guys' roster or your lineup or your remaining run-in games, it's a much easier one. And I think Arsenal, unfortunately, have made it a lot more difficult. Not impossible by any means. They're still ahead of Liverpool, and they're just beneath you guys. But this run-in is going to be extremely more difficult for an Arsenal team that had already been undefeated in the Premier League in 2024. Asking them to go another 7 games undefeated or really lossless would have been almost nearly impossible. So it was inevitable that a loss was going to come, I think, by the end of the run-in. And unfortunately, now I think maybe one or two more will follow. Possibly one. I don't think two. I think we'll get one more loss.
Yeah, I don't think two. I think you guys, I mean, you're still one of the strongest teams, if not, you know, the most informed in 2024, I think, is pretty clear to say at that point.
Yeah.
Even with the loss.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that they bounce back tomorrow, not tomorrow, on Wednesday against Bayern Munich. And if they can get a good run in there and then you guys beat Real Madrid, I feel a little bit more comfortable then. Arsenal versus Man City in the semifinals. And then I'm not too worried about the teams on the other side of the bracket, although it's the Champions League. I'm worried about every team. But as far as actual physical concern, it's not as high as what I would face if I'm facing Man City and or Real Madrid in the next round.
I'm worried about Coventry, man. We still got to play them in the FA Cup after they beat Man U.
It's true. But I know Sean, unfortunately, was popped off. I think we're having some technical difficulties with that. But we're gonna skip the Liverpool game right now.
This and if sounds Conte like will pop back on, we'll go it. We might just not have to conveniently talk about the Liverpool game, huh, James?
I think you and I can come up with a few things about that game if Sean can't make it back.
Oh, he'll kill us.
But why don't we go ahead and we'll do some rapid kicks while we wait for Sean to return. And the first one, Kyle, is Bournemouth versus Man U. So why don't you give that a shout out?
Yeah, Bournemouth started that game real nice. Bournemouth was never losing that game against Manchester United, which is high praise for Bournemouth, I think. The game ended up a 2-2 draw. Bruno Fernandes scored twice each time coming back. One was a penalty. Bournemouth also had a penalty overturned by VAR. It was just outside the box. Watch it. Let me know what you think. It's borderline. I think they made the right call on that one, though. But, yeah, I think that's a huge point for Bournemouth. It's a huge 2-point loss for Man U right there.
Yeah, especially coming off of the form that I think that, you know, Manchester United have been in as of late. I mean, they did have that heartbreaking loss to Chelsea. And then, before that was a heartbreaking tie to Brentford. but you just had the 2-2 tie against Liverpool, and then you fucking lose to the tie to the Cherries. It's a loss in my opinion. And of course, you don't have an easy fixture coming up next with the FA Cup being the FA Cup away. But you should be beating Coventry.
Oh, whoa!
And then you have Sheffield United. Whoa, Coventry, you should.
Coventry is on a historic run here. The other thing for Man U though, which is kind of hurting them, is their locker room right now. Did you see with Garnacho? He and Ten Hag are at not a standstill, but it's been made public that Garnacho will be receiving a punishment for his antics on social media going against Ten Hag, where Ten Hag kind of said some things about Garnacho, put a little blame on him in the post-game interview. And then Garnacho, all he did was he liked a tweet from some random guy that said, you know, Ten Hag has just been taking out all of his problems on the young guys because he's too afraid to scold the players that he spent money on wrongly. And Garnacho, he just liked the post. It became public that he liked it, and it was made very apparent that he's going to be receiving a punishment from the organization for liking that post. So, I mean, that's just another thing, man. Just another thing that's got going for him.
All these distractions. Well, one distraction real quick is the Fulham 2 West Ham 0 game. Andreas Pereira scored a double to give Fulham a rare away victory. And we say rare, I mean extremely, extremely rare. I mean, we were talking about it, joking around last week when Sean had his lock of the week and he wasn't on, but we said it has to be West Ham over Fulham because Fulham are just absolutely trash away. But unfortunately, they did not win West Ham, and Fulham won 2-0. So our lock of the weeks continue
absolutely
atrocious. Fulham have won 3 away games. They've won 3 away games, and both times I'm pretty sure have been locks against them. So just goes to show that we are absolute shite when it comes to predicting. Not you, Sean and I are absolute shite on predicting lock of the weeks live on this podcast. Outside of this podcast, it's not bad.
We're almost 500. Yeah. Almost 500. It's just we're all terrible.
A couple last rapid kicks here is the Chelsea 6, Everton 0 today. Cole Palmer scores 4 goals as Chelsea cruise at Stamford Bridge. They have 11 goals and 4 assists in the last 6 games for Palmer, and he's got 20 goals of the season now, which is tied with Erling Haaland for the Golden Boot. This is also his second hat trick in a row from him at Stamford Bridge, which becomes the first player in Chelsea history to have back-to-back hat tricks at the Bridge. Now, another crazy part that unfortunately is very stereotypical of Chelsea: you do something great, you got to do something wrong. And if you have not seen the highlights of this game, they skip it, but you got to watch it. It is a huge shout out to the hearts of the 5-year-old players on that pitch that were fighting, quite literally fighting each other over a penalty kick that made it 5-0. You had Medueke, you had Nicholas Jackson, you had Cole Palmer, and you had Connor Gallagher in the middle of the penalty kick, in the middle of the box, trying to delegate the PK, who has already been assigned to Cole Palmer. There is no need for this conversation because Cole Palmer is your penalty kick taker. He has a hat trick. One more goal puts him tied for the Golden Boot, and he is your penalty kick taker. Connor Gallagher did the best he could being a captain on the pitch that defended Cole Palmer's position with the ball and pushed away Medueke and Nicholas Jackson, who were, in my opinion, completely in the wrong, and makes a absolutely laughing matter of a great victory for Chelsea. So really unfortunate there.
Yeah, I agree.
But a big shout out to Cole Palmer.
I agree that, I mean, both Jackson and Medueke are in the wrong, but I think Jackson's a little more in the wrong here because he had already scored in the game. And he was nowhere near involved in the penalty, where you can make the argument that Madueke was directly involved in the penalty and hadn't scored yet. And you're up 4-0. You know, there are players in the world. I've seen Neymar do it where he lets the other guys take it after he has a hat trick. And he's like, you know what? Who cares at that point? Let the guy get his goal. You know what I mean? But Nico Jackson, having already scored, having been not part of that buildup and still fighting, and he was the biggest aggressor for it, was a joke, an absolute goddamn spectacle of a joke. So, yeah, Chelsea's doing great. Love to see that. Great 6-0 win.
But my other thing is, like, Madueke has done that before where he's tried to take the ball off Palmer before a penalty. And it's like, dude, until he misses, he takes every pet.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Fuck it. You should just be happy. At that point, if I'm another guy, I'm like, just feed Palmer. Feed him. He's literally the only one, not the only one, but he is the closest one knocking on Erling Haaland's boots for the Golden Boot. and he's got make him have four goals. We did not go over the Forest game yet, Sean. So if you want to cover that, and then we'll pop back into Liverpool, we can right into that.
We also got to talk Man City here for a second. There's a 6-goal thriller there.
Oh, yes.
That's all you guys got to know. 6-goal thriller. Man City wins 5-1. 37 shots. It almost looked like Liverpool. It was fun. But, yeah, they're back to the top of the league where they belong. Yeah, that's really it. Good game to watch.
Yeah, except you guys actually score. First Forest and Wolves 2-2. Matthias Cunha made his first start since February and scored a double in this one, including probably the best goal of the weekend for me, or at least one of the best. Maisie solo effort. Also in this game, Morgan Gibbs-White scored against his boyhood club and celebrated his dick off in front of the fans of Wolves, which was pretty wild. I thought he was going to run towards the Forest fans because he scored like right in front of the away end. He stopped, turned, looked, put both fingers in his ears, and just said, and got like about 100 fuck yous from every person the first four rows from Wolves. Traveling support, which is pretty funny. That's a big point, though, for Forest. It does move them out of the relegation zone. It's not just on goal differential that separates them from relegation now. But, as we'll talk about in a few minutes, obviously they have a huge game coming up this weekend. And speaking of huge games and not a thriller, is Crystal Palace 1-0 over Liverpool at Anfield. Yuck. That's my takeaway. Yuck.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Moving on.
Yep. All right. So anyway, so Everton Forest.
I did mention when you popped off real fast there, Sean, I did mention that, you know, if you were an Arsenal fan or a Manchester City fan watching this game, more so an Arsenal fan, you deserved exactly what came for you later in that day, because I was hand up to God. I was hate watching pretty hard. And as soon as you guys did lose, I go to Luigi. I go, there's way too much soccer left. This means nothing. We're still going to fuck it up. And lo and behold, we did. But at least I got to, you know, really think it was possible for a good 35, 45 minutes there. But Sean, take us through this yuck, man.
Yeah. So basically, I mean, Crystal Palace started this game really well. They get an early lead off a really nice team goal by Eberechi Eze. I've also resigned as president of his fan club after yesterday. I can't have that. I can't have you sticking a knife in our backs for our title chances. I'm sorry, Eberechi Eze. I'm going to resign. I'm still a fan. I'll always be a fan, but as president, no way. So that was another thing to add to the list of hits.
Yep.
Seeing him and Elise team up to score the only goal of the game was like taking a razor scooter to the shin. So that was always fun.
This was like their first time in a while that they've actually been able to play together. I think maybe they've played like a handful of times this whole season. So you can just think about like what could have been for your silky smooth ballers. But now you will never appreciate it again.
No, certainly not to the same level. And right after that, Mateta was in on goal, chipped Allison. But Andy Robertson made a great play to clear it off the line and keep it 1-0. So there was always still a chance. And Liverpool had plenty of them in this game, 3.39 in terms of XG, but zero goals. I mean, I could point out seven or eight players who, you know, missed a chance, whether it was Endo off the crossbar, Nunez hitting a volley about 300 miles per hour right into Dean Henderson's stomach, Diaz missing a chance, which really was more just complete and pure luck from Dean Henderson.
Yeah.
Had no idea that he saved it. Basically was just running to the post and it bounced up and ricocheted off his backhand. But the two ones that really hurt the most for me were Jota, who finally made his return from injury. Szoboszlai gets in, goes around the keeper, lays it off for Jota. He has all of the net to shoot at with the exception of where Nathaniel Clyne is standing. And where does the most clinical finisher on Liverpool's team put the shot? Into Nathaniel Klein's midsection. It was like, oh, at that point, it just was like, we're not going to score. It's just not happening today. It's not our day. And then Curtis Jones had two big ones. One where he basically had the whole net to shoot at and still missed wide. And then the other one was on a breakaway that he also put wide. It was bad. It was just a lifeless performance. Yes, obviously we had a lot of chances, but we were also really bad defensively in this game. I guess having Allison back, they felt more comfortable to take chances, but Palace could have had two or three goals easily as well. They put up 2.01 in XG, and it was just a disappointing game overall. Before I, you know, really keep hammering Liverpool, I want to shout out Adam Wharton, who was signed from Blackburn in the January transfer window. He's only 19. This kid's a freaking baller, man. He was really, really impressive to me. First time that I really got to watch him up close. I mean, I've seen cameos. Obviously, I always kind of keep up on Palace a little bit, but this kid's really quite a player in central midfield. I thought he was really impressive. And then Tyrick Mitchell, again, putting Salah in his pocket. Just one goal contribution in five starts when Tyrick Mitchell plays for Mo Salah. And yeah, like I said, a day of missed chances. I mean, according to FootBob, Liverpool have three of the top 11 players in terms of expected goals. They have Salah in second, Nunez in sixth, and Diaz in 11th. And all three of them have underperformed their XG. The biggest culprit of that being Diaz, believe it or not, and then shortly followed behind by Nunez. But overall, I mean, it's a team theme of late, at least the last 2 months, just Liverpool not putting away or dispatching their chances. On the season, they've put up an expected goals of 73.5, which is 6.5 more than City and 10.6 more than Arsenal, but they have 3 and 4 less goals scored than both of those teams. So it's like the chances are there for the taking, and they're just simply not taking them. I think, like I've talked about, obviously Jota is a big part of that, but he missed a chance in this game. Obviously, he's been out for 2 months, so he's not in form, but it's like, dude, we need you to bail us out. And just my last thing before, you know, I wallow in my misery is Jurgen Klopp's lost 11 times in the Premier League at Anfield, once to Swansea City in his first season, a 6-game losing streak during COVID with no fans, once last year to Leeds in stoppage time, and 3 times to Crystal fucking Palace.
Yeah.
It's just like it boggles the mind. It really does, because I mean, Palace isn't even a team that's been that impressive this season. Like, I mean, if you were talking about teams outside the traditional big six, you'd look at Bournemouth, you'd look at Fulham, yeah, and you'd say those teams have certainly been more impressive. Or, you know, West Ham have been more impressive than they have this season, but when everybody is fit, they have that individual quality to make it, you know, to make you pay. And their defense was great. Klein, Tyrick Mitchell, Henderson made big saves. They have Gehi and Anderson. So all those guys deserve credit. But at the end of the day, Liverpool should have won this game 3-1. That's just the reality of it. So it's really a tough one to take, particularly after they got smoked in Europa League as well. So not a good week. I'm just glad I have you to wallow in the misery with me, James, pull you down, especially because I know you were hate watching and celebrating Sunday morning.
100%. Everything was deserved. Although I feel like some happiness would have been nice too for a little bit longer. But yes, I suppose we can both wallow in it together. Both great institutions, both providing the most challenging run-in for Manchester City this season. Very difficult. So, Sean, though, if you had to right now say no shot or shot still for Liverpool, where do you put their chances of raising the Premier League title?
I mean, I've been here too many times to say that they're going to win it now. I the chances are like 2% to me. I think probably even less than that, honestly. First of all, they're losing the goal differential battle to Arsenal, so they would still need Arsenal to drop points again down the stretch here. But beyond that, I mean, waiting for Man City, you know, to fumble a league title race, you know, at the end, I've seen it 2 other times. It's like waiting for Margot Robbie to slide into my DMs. Yeah, it could happen, but it's not fucking likely. So, and I'm not getting my hopes up. And that's the reality. I just think 6 games for them to go. There's a couple of ones that maybe cause pause. It really is. It's just that Spurs game for me. They're going to win all the rest of them. They'll probably do it in some excruciating, painful fashion where you and I both think there's a chance where the door is cracked and then they score a late goal and dash all of our hopes, because they don't just win. they have to do it and be sickos too.
Yeah. And I said that I would mention it later on in the podcast when I said it earlier, but it is the comparisons of leagues real fast, right? So you have Bayer Leverkusen playing out of their gourd, right? No one expected that to happen, but they are now the league winners with five games left. Then you go over to La Liga. You have a similar situation. Real Madrid, I think, is 10 or 13 points ahead of Barcelona, who had a very, very bad run in the middle of the season. And it's just now, since Gavi announced that he is no longer returning, he's gone on this insane form streak. Then you have Serie A, Inter Milan. If they win next weekend against Milan, they win the league. And I think they have five games left as well, something around that number. You look at the English Premier League, you have three teams separated by 2 points, and the goal differential, I think, is now four, right, between Man City and Arsenal. It's ridiculously tight, and it gets to the feeling that you almost absolutely have to be 100% perfect on the run-in. You cannot lose. And I would even go one stance later on before the run-in. You have to be golden from, let's say, the halfway point. Your run-in is now 18 games, 20 games. Congratulations. If you don't win 95% of those, there's a good shot that fucking City will. And it's brutal. It's brutal. And I experienced it last year, and I'm experiencing it again this year. So I look to you with all your wisdom on how you cope with it later on, Sean. But I think this puts a good wrap on the weekend wrap up. And I think we can kind of put a thumbnail in it, and we'll come back for the look ahead. And we'll do that very quickly. Well, we've heard from the distraught this weekend, but we have not fully grasped the opposite of agony and favit. We haven't grasped the thrill of victory, and Kyle is lining up for a good-looking run-in for you guys in Man City. How do you feel after this weekend, as we like to call it here, as you too likes to call it, after that Sunday, Bloody Sunday? How are you feeling? with Manchester City.
To be 100% honest, fortunate, lucky. That was not how that weekend was supposed to go, but that's how it went. So, yeah, I'm pretty happy with how everything turned out, obviously. I was looking at odds to win the right now. City's minus 250, Arsenal's plus 400, Liverpool's plus 550. But, I mean, that's got to be them just saying, as Sean said, I've seen this movie before. This is not the first time that City has had a title race with a team like Liverpool or Arsenal. And it turns out in our favor most of the time. What I was looking at, though, is we have a maximum amount of points this season at 91. If we win out, we score 91 points, which it's crazy to say this, but as far as Pep Guardiola's seasons have gone, that's kind of the door being open for a team to come in and win it. So we'll see how that goes. I don't think any team, truthfully, I don't think a single team in the Prem is going to hit 90 points this season. There's been a lot of draws, a lot of crazy games turned upside their heads, but I think if there is a team in the driver's seat right now to take the whole thing, it's going to be City. They just, they're in strength of schedule. I don't think they might have the easiest out of the remaining three, right?
Like they do.
Yeah,
they do. Maybe your slip up games are Fulham away because they've been a menace to top 10 teams this season. And then of course Spurs, because you guys have allergic reaction every time you see a peacock or like something it's that resembles.
Hey, listen, the bus drive up to London's no joke. We know this. It really takes a toll on the players. But, just moving on to the look ahead here. Big game, Everton-Nottingham Forest. Big game for Everton. If they win this match, I'm not going to say, knock on wood here, but if they win this match, they should be safe for the season. I want to say they lost 6-0 this weekend. It's not really a representation on today on how poorly Everton played. They maintained 40% possession throughout the game. They got off 10 shots. It's just none of them went in. Like, it wasn't the saddest performance for a 6-0 defeat like we've seen before. Like, I would say that they played a lot better than Luton did this weekend. A lot better. But, listen, Everton won the first game 1-0. So, this one's going to be at Goodison Park. I think Everton take this one pretty nicely.
Yeah, I mean, not for nothing. We're also going to call expected XGs on this, right? Chelsea's XGs was only 2.96 to Everton's 1.41.
Yeah.
So the score line is, you know, it never adds up completely. But one thing that, you know, Everton are definitely going to hope for as well is a draw or a loss from this next match for Luton Town. The next game I have highlighted here, this is a good weekend for the bottom of the table for these matchups. This is when the run-in gets real good for relegation, right? So we have Luton Town versus Brentford at Kenilworth Road. So this is a must win for Luton Town as well. If they win, they're going to be the biggest Toffee fans later on Sunday to hope for them to beat Forest. Because no matter what the result on that game versus Everton versus Nottingham Forest, if Luton Town win, they will be out of the relegation zone. They currently sit in, 18th place with 25 points, I believe. So if they were to win this game and the other two teams were either to tie or Everton were to lose, Luton Town would be safe from relegation. The only thing is if Everton ties, they would technically, I think, be ahead of them in goal differential, but you're very, very close now. So I think this is a must win for Luton Town. The Bees and the Hatters have both only managed one win in their last five matches. The Bees with three draws to the Hatters, one draw, but it is a home game. And with Luton Town, we know one thing is they don't go down without a fight at Kenilworth Road, other than their FA Cups thrashing by Man City. But that's a completely different story. If the Hatters were to win this game, I think they're guaranteed safety for at least one more week. So hopefully we can see the Hatters win and the Toffees win. And then the Lumberjack, Sean Larkin, will also be relatively happy there too. But Sean, why don't you take us to the other round of games this weekend, which is kind of putting another monkey wrench into our EPL fixtures, and that's the FA Cup.
Absolutely. So we have the FA Cup semifinals. We talked about, obviously, the quarters, Coventry City advance against Wolves. They're playing Manchester United. They're looking to be the first championship team since Cardiff City to reach the FA Cup final, which they did it back in 2008. This is the second time in the club's history that they're playing in an FA Cup semifinal. Their previous appearance, they actually won it back in 1987. And then from the United perspective, they're looking to get, obviously, back to their second straight FA Cup final. And then on the other side, we have the two teams that have dominated the trophy for the last 7, 8, 9 years. Chelsea, who's been in 5 of the last 7 finals, up against Man City. And believe it or not, these teams have been pretty evenly matched. They've played twice this year, once at Stamford Bridge in one of the best games of the season in a 4-4 final, and once at the Etihad 1-1, which that game was heated, to say the least. There's a late Rodri equalizer in that one. These teams, when they get together, they seem to have a pretty good matchup, especially those two managers, Poch and Guardiola. Chelsea seems to potentially be hitting a little bit of form. I mean, knock on wood, obviously they've still so up and down for the most part. But, I mean, in the last week alone, they have this obviously thumping of Everton that we discussed today. And then, obviously, they also beat Manchester United. Sandwich in between draws to relegation teams. So who fucking knows with them? You know what I mean? I don't know what else to say at this point. They are such a friggin' mess. It's crazy, but... Man City obviously looking to remain as the holders, and the treble is still alive, which is ridiculous to say.
It's nuts. It's nuts. Imagine they go back to back. I would vomit. I think I'd puke everywhere. It'd be horrible. Honestly.
City lost to them in the Champions League finals. I still hate Chelsea for that. I got a tattoo before that game, and it's the worst thing of the world. Fuck Chelsea.
Yeah, it's easily the worst tattoo I've ever seen too, and like I've seen people with like a pumpkin with crossbows on it on their forearm. So
yeah, I probably shouldn't have guessed the correct score at the bottom of the tattoo. That was just silly.
brutal. Well, I want to say one thing to the Arsenal fans out there. I meant to mention it before during my rant, but I forgot. There's still hope out there. And one thing I'd say is if you were in that stadium at the Emirates Stadium and you left before full-time whistle, you guys can go fuck yourselves, because that was fucking disgusting what I saw.
Disgusting.
It was horrible. It was horrible. This team has put up so much for the fan base and can reconnect the fan base. And we're chanting songs, you know, when we were slapping people around, you know, everywhere we go, empty stadiums follow. And then we fucking leave with the last 10 minutes of the match and our stadium is empty. You can go fuck yourselves. You are not a true Arsenal team supporter, but also don't give up hope. Keep a little bit of hope, just a small bit of hope, because maybe Man City will make everyone else happy and lose at least two games. Sean, I think you could keep a little bit of hope too. Not a lot, but just a little bit.
The hope is what kills you. I have no hope. I am dead inside.
How many times did we hear James say that phrase last season? It's the hope that kills you.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. But listen, hopefully all of you out there enjoyed the podcast and maintain a little
James,
bit of
no lock of the week
remainder
week?
Of the week. Oh, fuck that. That has no hope either. Are you kidding me? I mean, I can give you a random one right off the top of
Liverpool's
my head.
Liverpool's going to win this week. They're coming back. They're winning.
Yeah, no. I'm going to go Villa over Bournemouth. They're going to kick the shit out of Bournemouth. I'm going Villa. Villa over
I love
Bournemouth.
It.
I don't even know what the odds are, but I'm just throwing it out
they're
there.
They're very good. I think that should happen.
Well, good. So hopefully I'll be right on that. But I think that's enough hope talk. It will kill us, but together we will survive. Gents, always a pleasure. Thank you all the listeners out there. This was another brutal episode of EPL State of Mind, but the title race is not over, and neither is the podcast. So we'll see you next week.